We see a lot of people who do well in their careers that also coincidentally did well in their careers at camp. I have no data, obviously, other than the anecdotal experiences of the time we spent there, but you could see people who rose to leadership positions in camp and were viewed as successful staff members at camp have had successful careers in whatever they're doing after camp.
I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Tightrope Podcast. We tell the stories of people who are defining the future of work. Our guests walk the tightrope, away from meaningless toil, and towards work that is profound, protects the planet, empowers people, and is fun to do, meaningful work. The stories that our guests tell, and the insights that they provide, will inspire you to connect with work and experiences that stoke your passions and make the world a better place. For the future of work is meaningful work. The Memorial Day weekend marks the official start of summer. And yet this year, summertime has arrived without the fun. Annually, over 11 million kids and young adults spend summer in overnight camps. But in 2020, some states that are concerned about the spread of the COVID-19 coronavirus have banned summer camps from operating. For kids who work hard in school 10 months out of the year for the reward of 2 months at summer camp, the loss of the 2020 summer season is palpable. For this episode, recorded in August 2019, I sat down with my best friend, Stu Katz. Our lifelong friendship grew out of many summers together at Camp Laurelwood, an overnight camp on the southern Connecticut shoreline. When we recorded the interview, I decided to hold it to stream just before Camp Laurelwood's 2020 season. Despite the fact that our camp will remain closed this summer, I decided to run it anyway to demonstrate why attending summer camp was so important to us. The experiences we shared as kids at camp shaped our successful lives and careers. Stu tells an amazing story about the lifelong value of the overnight camp experience, one that I hope you will enjoy and appreciate. Our best wishes go out to every summer camp that cannot operate this summer, but most of all, to the disappointed children and staff members. For them, the summer of 2021 cannot arrive soon enough. So Stuart Katz, welcome to the Tightrope.
Thank you so much.
So let's set the stage. You and I have known each other since kindergarten, but we became close lifelong friends at Camp Laurelwood, which is an overnight camp in southern Connecticut. Before you arrived at camp for the first time, do you remember what you wanted to be when you grew up?
I don't know that I had any specific recollections other than the typical little boy things of like a fireman or, you know, a pilot or an astronaut or something like that. But I did not have any known cognizant career goals until I spent a few summers at camp.
Take us back to camp. What was your first summer like at Camp Laurelwood? You were 7 years old. Start us with opening day. What was that like?
Well, I'm an only child, so the prospect of being around other boys my own age, you know, and having fun in the process was something that I was looking forward to. I did not have any apprehension about being away from my parents because I already had a pretty good amount of independence anyway as an only child. So I went for a month the first summer, and my parents dropped me off, and it was not a big scene or anything, and I just remember like saying goodbye to them and going swimming within a matter of minutes. And I liked the camp experience. I had really good counselors at camp. There were a lot of different activities, sports and other things to do. And so I got sort of the camp fever in my system and quickly started going back every year.
So you mentioned being an only child, but you were also a latchkey kid. Your mom and dad worked at a family restaurant mornings and afternoons, and then often you didn't see them very much. So what was that like, by contrast, showing up at camp and now suddenly you're living with these boys who are your same age? What was it like having sort of like proxy brothers?
Yeah, that was fun. And I made a very good friend, you know, right away within the first hour or two that we were in the bunk. Also, camp in those days in the late 60s, the Vietnam War was still a hot shooting war. and one of the head counselors had been in the army in World War II, and so there was a lot of military aspect to camp, which I kind of liked a little bit, you know, waking up to reveille, raising the flag, lowering the flag, playing taps before you went to sleep, you know, military terms like we ate dinner in the mess hall and those kinds of things. I liked all that, and I liked making new friends, some that lived near me and some that didn't.
You and I were friends from the time we were in kindergarten, but we got closer as 11-year-olds because it was that year we were in the same bunk. What I remember about that time was that our counselors and certainly our division head and camp leadership urged us to try activities beyond our comfort zone. What do you remember about activities that you had never tried before?
This is a pivotal thing about the camp that we went to. The first couple of years that I went there, you were told what to do every period, whether you liked it or not. So first period, you're playing basketball. Second period, you're going swimming. Third period, you're playing tennis. Fourth period, you're going to arts and crafts. And it was pretty much a take it or leave it proposition with very little choice. But in the 70s and under a new director, then every period was you can either do this, 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 or this. So then people started gravitating to things that they might not have tried before because it wasn't being forced on them. And people, including me, you know, went to activities just encouraged by our counselors to try something that we haven't done before and then discovered that we liked it. And I think, especially knowing a lot of people that we went to camp with, that's a much different message than you have to go to music third period.
Right.
But, or to say third period, you could either go to music, you could go swimming, you could play tennis, or you could do something else. And people would gravitate to things that they liked. And some people were more willing to try something new than others. But I think most of us, at least on the encouragement of our counselors, would go to things, even if it was just once, to see if we liked it or not. That was the argument. Like, just go try this. You might like it. And some people did. And people who weren't very athletic, they didn't want to play basketball or softball 4 hours a day. But some people would have, you know, given the opportunity.
So I was an arts and crafts kid. I grew up in a home with lots of art. I was encouraged to do art. So my get out of my comfort zone was horseback riding. What was your get out of comfort zone activity?
I mean, I like to be involved in sports as much as, you know, anybody else, but I gravitated toward photography, and I didn't have a lot of experience in photography when there was a significant photography program initiated at camp, but I found it fascinating working in a darkroom because, of course, it was film then and not digital photography.
Right.
Mixing the chemicals, being in a pitch black, trying to figure out how to handle film and roll film on a spool in a 100% pitch black room. And I really started spending, you know, a lot of time in photography when it was an activity, and also just taking pictures around camp at any time, whether it was a scheduled activity or not.
Did you have a Brownie camera or something like that growing up that you used to take pictures?
My father was big into Polaroids. My father had a Polaroid camera. Yeah. And that was fun because you take the picture and then 2 seconds later, you know, you would see it, or like a minute later. But at camp, I remember having cameras that had the 126 plastic cartridge that you dropped into the back of the camera.
Right, the Instamatics.
Right. And it was a little flash on a turret, and you took the picture, the flash went off, and then when you wound the film, it turned the flash one turn. There were four flashes on the thing. So that was the first camera that I remember taking a lot of pictures with at camp. And eventually, when I really started getting more into it, then my parents bought me an SLR.
What do you remember about that? Because that was a formative experience for you. The guy that was teaching photography at the time was a professional newspaper photographer in New Haven.
Right. And he was only at camp one or at the most two summers, but he saw that I really had an interest in this and presumably a smidgen of ability. And so even after he left camp, he would have me come down to the newspaper where he worked, and I would watch him work or go with him on photo shoots and then go back to the newspaper photo lab to watch him develop the film or help them if there was a big thing going on and many photographers were out at the same time all bringing film back. So I was able to learn a lot more through that process and continue as the camp photography program improved, moved into a bigger space, nicer mm-hmm. dark room, new and larger. So I was able to practice photography, you know, particularly in high school year round, because I attended an art school in New Haven, Connecticut, where we're from, mm-hmm. that had a very involved photography program also.
So you were getting graduate level training from him, I would think.
It was a very immersive experience in photojournalism that I only got to have because I met this person when he was the camp counselor for photography.
So one of the things that brought us closer together was a shared interest in radio. And as our listeners know, I started in college in radio, got away from it, and now sort of am back with it with this podcast. This is when we were 13 years old. It was like a talent show and had a skit about a camp radio station. Do you remember that?
I don't remember that. That doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Sure.
It just means I don't remember it.
The next thing I know, the camp director was building us a radio station.
That I remember extensively.
What do you remember about that?
Well, we liked music, and the camp had a very robust sound system of loudspeakers all through the camp. And so we wanted to have a camp radio station and play music and pretend to be disc jockeys through the camp. And it was so popular that we ended up having two radio stations, one in the morning that was sort of the AM station, and one in the afternoon that was more like the FM station.
Yeah, that's where I migrated towards.
Right. So the camp supported our interest in communications and media through the radio station, because that was not an activity. We were the only kids that did the radio station.
Right.
You couldn't sign up for that, or you couldn't go to that third period. Like, it was just our thing. We did it, and that was how it went out.
So for our younger listeners who are used to getting electronic media through Apple Music or something like that, back when we were kids, it was 45s and albums. And what was amazing was that the camp spent liberally to buy us whatever we wanted. We had an instant radio station,
too. We had turntables, we had mixers, we had microphones. We had quite an extensive selection of records every summer. We ran contests. We had prizes. And we came up with all this stuff ourselves. No adult was helping us, as I'm sure you recall.
Right.
We just did it on our own because we were motivated by it and it was fun. And people seemed to like it, or at least didn't complain about it enough to have it stop.
So a little more background about us. We both worked at Camp Laurelwood after our years as campers. And later we roomed together where we attended and graduated from the Park School of Communications at Ithaca College. Thinking back, do you think that our camp experiences advantaged us in our college pursuits? And if so, how?
A lot of the experiences at camp helped us in college, because the number one thing you learn at camp is to function effectively with many different types of people. That's the number one thing. People that you can get along with and be friends with and also work on something successfully together. People that you can work on something successfully together even though you might not like them personally, or somebody who you like personally but they're very difficult to work with on when you're trying to accomplish something. So all these different personality types and work styles were things that we learned at camp. And then when you get to college, you find yourself in the same situation. You're living with people 24 hours a day. You're not around your parents.
Right.
And now you have things that need to be accomplished. It might be a group project or something like that, but you have to find a way to deal with people effectively that may not mesh with your own personality type and whatever quirks of personality you have.
So those experiences doing photography and later the radio station obviously informed your preferences to pursue work in TV.
Right. I went from photography to radio to television, basically.
So what are you doing now? Tell our listeners where you've ended up.
What I do now is I own a company that produces medical video material. So our clients are pharmaceutical companies, biotech companies, academic medical centers, and nonprofit voluntary health organizations in most cases. And we create media that is used to train physicians about new medications, teach patients about medications that they or a member of their family might be taking, how to administer medication, because a lot of drugs these days are not just a tablet or a capsule that you could take with a glass of water. So we do a lot of training on dosing and administration of things like infusions, patches, inhalers, and other types of dosage forms of drugs. But everything we do is related to a healthcare company or a healthcare topic.
And you've also used your time to teach. So you're back at Ithaca College as an adjunct professor.
I teach one course, a one-credit course once a year, but I did teach as a part-time faculty member for a few years until my travel schedule got so hectic. I didn't want to keep missing classes, so I told them that I couldn't do it anymore. But I was teaching. I was essentially a part-time faculty member at Ithaca College for 3 years also.
Do you ever think back on the work that you're doing now, both with your company and working with students, to how maybe some of the spark of imagination for doing that work started at camp?
Sure. And the idea of applying creative energy to something to achieve some sort of a communications goal is something that you and I have been doing for a long time. Whether it was coming up with humorous radio spots for the fictional camp radio station.
Right.
And that was even when we didn't even have the radio station anymore. We just made the commercials just to play for people and have a laugh about it.
Right.
Which I still have on my computer, you know, sitting right over there. That idea of applying creative energy to things that interest us, you know, I kept doing. And I also learned from my father about the importance of trying to give back. We've always done a lot of pro bono work, and we continue to do that. Right now we're working with the Alzheimer's Association of New Jersey on a project that'll, you know, probably be done by the end of the year.
So amazingly, after all these years since we first became friends, we're both connected to this camp community. You as a former board member and still in as an advisor, me as a camper dad, but also the father of a staff member who's actually worked there longer than I did. And unlike me, you actually show up on opening day to relive that experience of opening day. Why do you do that?
I've now attended 52 opening days at our camp. I like to go up there and help out just because I want to be helpful, but I like to see the expressions on those kids' faces when they're rolling up to camp and seeing their friends that they haven't seen in possibly 10 months, because I see that was us. I see those kids walking up the road to the boys' bunks or running across the main part of the campus to go hug their friend. And I've seen, obviously, your daughter have that experience many times. And the children of lots of our friends have that experience. And so I still like to go up and see how happy kids are to be at camp. And knowing that, hopefully, for a fair number of them, it will provide some transformative energy into the rest of their lives.
You and I guess for lack of a better term, were specialists. We were not camp counselors, although I think 1 year we lived with campers. But my daughter has been a counselor now for 3 years. And what's interesting to me about that is she knows teamwork and knows collaboration. And she's heading off to college this fall as a freshman. And we think that having the experience both as a camper, but also as a staff member working with kids, has some management utility. How do you feel about that?
I think it does. And the reason that I was never a counselor, though I certainly had the opportunity to be a counselor if I wanted to, was that I saw how hard we made our counselors work.
Right.
And I wasn't sure I wanted to work quite that hard. Though I did work hard, I didn't know if I wanted to work quite that hard. And I created a job track at camp.
Mm-hmm.
That was related to audiovisual media and showing the films and being a disc jockey for the dances and running the microphones every time there was a special event. So that was kind of the area that I drifted toward, because that was related to now what I was fairly confident I wanted to be involved in as a career. So that's why I was not a counselor.
So we've spent a lot of time talking about the greatness of the camper experience, and I have to imagine that makes some of our listeners feel a little bit left out. Not everybody gets to go to camp. I mean, for some families, it could be very expensive. It could be a hardship. Maybe they're not able to get a scholarship to send their child to a sleepaway camp or even a day camp. So given all that, how would you encourage an adult professional, a careerist who
either forgot about what it was like to be at camp or who never attended as a child to channel some camp-like experiences as adults.
Some camps have a summer camp experience for adults. So even that prospect of going to a camp and being in a bunk and kind of roughing it a little bit, if you're used to staying in the Marriott, teaches a little bit of, you know, humility and how to handle some adversity. But I think the process of dealing with people, especially in these days when people tend to stay in a job for 3 or 4 years and then move to another job,
right,
it's almost like going to another camp. You know, you're being with a whole group of different people. They already have their own little relationships and everything that have been formed. You're spending 40 hours a week, presumably, with them. And so having some opportunities to test drive your ability to function with multiple different types of personalities, if there are opportunities to do that, I would suggest somebody try to do that. I know the people, the alumni of our camp, are always saying to us, when can we go back to camp for like a week or a long weekend and just
right.
be the campers again, because they miss it. And so it obviously has some impact in their lives.
Well, let's face it. Work is hard. Life is hard. The work that many of us do borders on meaninglessness because the requirements are so difficult and we're not having fun anymore. I keep looking back to those camp days because it was all fun. There wasn't any strife.
Not too much, no.
We had the time of our lives, but we got the chance to explore beyond what was comfortable to us. You know, I think about when I was in advertising one summer, we actually had a summer camp. It was for a day. They made us duffel bags. They renamed the company Camp Run Amok. We had camp shirts. What they found, at least within the creative departments, is that it kind of rebooted them. They got to live outside the office a little bit and be around nature and play dodgeball or whatever. And it makes me wonder if maybe that's what we need to do more in companies that are getting stale in their process.
Yeah, I think because, you know, we have seen with our, among our clients, the different times, different types of team building activities and things that they do, whether it's for like lower to middle management or upper management. I know one of my clients' companies actually does a program with the U.S. Military Academy where they go up and go through some fitness activities and some training with colonels or generals. And there's different types of team building activities that people can do. But the summer camp experience, I think, puts people in an environment where they're very optimistic going in that they're going to enjoy themselves. So it makes it a little bit easier for them to relax and be a little more friendly to people that they might not know. And hopefully that would provide some benefit. But I hope in the next couple of years we can do a thing at our camp where people would stay for a few days and we'll all just pretend that we're, you know, 11 or 12 again.
Exactly. So to people listening to this who have children who haven't thought about sending their kids to camp, why is it important for them?
Well, there is lots of research about the benefits of summer camp on a child's development and grades. And I mean, you can go to the American Camping Association website and find that, I'm sure, without too much difficulty. And while camp is not for everyone, certainly, and we went to camp with people who camp was not for, right. So, you know, it's not for everyone. But for a lot of kids, it does provide an opportunity for them to find themselves and learn what they're good at. And we talk about, you know, just we can only speak to the camp that we went to because we didn't go to any other camps. But someone who was very much involved in arts and crafts, you know, becomes an interior decorator.
Right.
And someone who was very much involved in, you know, nature and pioneering and going on trips and stuff like that, works for the United States Forestry Service or things of that nature. So a lot of people found something that is important to them in their life in those younger days at camp. And it's not to say that it's impossible for someone to find what's important to them in life if they don't go to camp, but that process of being away from your family is a concentrating experience for that kind of thing.
Before you open each camp season, the night before, you sit down with staff members and you share some experiences of the camp experience with them. What are some of the things that you tell staff members who are about to accept first-time campers?
Sure. The staff at our camp, fortunately, has a lot of people who come back year after year and a lot who were former campers. So those people know a fair amount of what I might say before I start talking. But for the newer people and people that have never been to our camp or in some cases any camp before and now they're working there, I think it's important for them to understand how that first day is so critical, because I remember how it was for me. And I've seen over the years how kids react when they walk into the bunk for the first time and meet the counselors, how the counselors are greeting them, how the other kids are greeting them. And that first 15 or 20 minutes after the parents leave, or even like while they're there and then when they leave, that's a very important part of the camp experience. So I talk about that a little bit, and also talk about the things that we want the kids to learn over the course of the summer. And I'm not talking about how to play tennis better. Right. I'm talking about how to get along with people better, because that's the real benefit of camp, because you didn't get to pick who was in your bunk.
So what you just mentioned actually is filtering through. So our daughter, the aspect of communication is really, really critical. And if any staff member deviates from that at some point and the staff members aren't talking to each other, that becomes a really big problem.
Right. The other thing is our camp is a nonprofit camp.
Right.
So we do try to educate kids about a little bit of spirit of giving. And many of them have taken that as well. Some of our camp's larger donors over the years have been people that were kids that were on scholarship when they were campers. So they figured it out and now they're helping the camp. And the other thing that I say to the staff is, you know, we want the kids to learn over time that you're always going to feel better when you're helping someone
right.
than when you're the recipient of the help.
So let's talk about that. From a managerial standpoint, that's a life skill that when taught young will serve you your lifetime.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, we see a lot of people who do well in their careers that also coincidentally did well in their careers at camp. I have no data, obviously, other than the anecdotal experiences of the time we spent there, but you could see people who rose to leadership positions in camp and were viewed as successful staff members at camp have had successful careers in whatever they're doing after camp. And that's a self-selection process, but it still gives people at the outset an equal opportunity to succeed.
The thing that I find interesting about our camp is that among our alumni, if we need a professional, maybe a doctor or an attorney, we often go to them first because we know them.
Absolutely. I can tell you a story that recently someone related to a few people in the camp community was critically ill, and a physician who was friends with the brother of the person that was critically ill flew across the country to help consult on his illness. Mm. And that is the kind of thing that camp people will do for each other. And I've seen that many times. And I think that bond of camp just gets ingrained in a lot of people and stays with them quite a long time. As it turns out, you know, the tagline of our camp is fun, friends, forever. And the forever part is what we're living now, because
right.
none of us have been at camp in 40-something years.
Right.
And we're still frequently spending time with our friends from camp, talking to people about camp, planning to go to camp. So that has caught on with a lot of people.
And there's the research, too, that the friendships that you make are usually made when you're young. It's harder to make new friendships with people you don't know when you're older.
Right.
For whatever reason.
And the other thing that's changed a little bit for the kids that go to camp now is, of course, the internet. When we were campers, the only way we could communicate was through mail or the phone. But if it was a long-distance call, you couldn't talk to your friend endlessly, you know, and ring up a long-distance call bill when you're 9 or 10 or 11 years old. Now, with the internet, these kids have their own Instagram groups or Snapchat groups. They're communicating from the moment they pull out of the camp driveway the last day of camp, and it continues all the way until they pull back into the camp driveway 10 months later. So there's a lot more opportunity for those friendships to strengthen that is different than me writing you a letter.
Right.
No camp that I'm aware of, including our camp, lets the campers have access to internet-enabled devices when they're away from their parents.
Right.
Even though they have them the other 10 months of the year, the point of camp is to disconnect, be in nature, get some fresh air, run around, don't be looking down at a screen.
Don't be looking down at a screen and look at another person and get to know them.
Right. But the moment their parents come and pick them up and hand them their phone back, and their other friend sleeps across the bunk from them, their parents are handing them their phone back. They're texting like crazy all the way while they're driving home.
But therein lies the opportunity because, I mean, kids, that's what they do now. When our daughter was younger, she'd be in the back seat with her friend, and they wouldn't be talking to each other. They'd be texting each other. I don't quite get that. But being at camp, I think the opportunity for people seeking meaningful work is, if you're in a rut, maybe go back to camp in the sense of reconnecting with somebody that you were friends with at camp. Maybe you have a shared interest and can start a new business or a new side hustle. Or for younger people, it may be the basis of a business venture or some sort of a career opportunity.
A lot of the people that we were at camp with are now creeping up on the end of their careers,
right,
and thinking about enjoying their retirement or things of that nature. But I know there are groups or clusters of former campers and staff members that get together on a regular basis, whether it's annually or every couple of years, and they really put a lot of energy into that. And it's fun to pretend that you don't have any responsibility when you have a lot of responsibility. It's fun to break away from that, and that's why people like to go to reunions and things of that nature. That if you are drawn into a summer camping mentality successfully, then it is hard to be filtered out.
We can both agree that summer camp is the place of dreams and may in fact be the starting point of meaningful work. And if you're hearing this, seek out opportunities that you can go back to camp. And so Stu Katz, thank you so much for joining us on The Tightrope.
Thank you.
Important social media links are provided in the show notes for this episode at dansmolin.com. Please join us again for more inspiring stories from people who walk the tightrope to seek and do meaningful work. You can subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts or listen to current and past episodes on our website at dansmolin.com. I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Tightrope Podcast. Together, let's walk the tightrope to find and do meaningful work. For the future of work is meaningful work. And do remember this, our best days lie ahead. Let's connect again next week.